suggestively amend 137.510. And my thinking was that the third alternative or place a defendant on probation would be controlled by the existing statute. And implicit in probation is the suspended sentence.
Well, then we can take care of it in the commentary.
Well, it shouldn't be, if you're not trying to amend 137.510, then you ought to, the course that John said to do. It seems to me the two statutes are inconsistent.
Well, 137.510, the headline reads, power of court to suspend imposition or execution of sentence or to place defendant on probation.
And that's misleading.
That's not part of the law. It reads to me it makes probation a condition of suspension.
Read that, yeah. 137.510.
One, the courts having jurisdiction of criminal or quasi-criminal actions, including actions for violation of municipal ordinance, when it appears that the best interest of the public is closed, the defendant will be subserved thereby, may A, suspend the imposition or execution of sentence for any crime or offense for any period not to exceed 5 years, and may also B, place the defendant on probation for a definite or indefinite period not less than 1 year or more than 5 years. And I got two, the power of the judge of any court to suspend execution of sentence or to grant probation to any person convicted of a crime shall continue until such person is delivered to the executive to the. But the key is this, and may also.
Right. I agree with you. And if the court wants to get to B, it has to go through A.
Right.
But it can stop at the end of A.
Right.
It doesn't have to go. It doesn't have to go.
So it seems to me that John's, if we want to keep that. I read, it seems to me that a practical matter doesn't make a hell of a lot of difference, but it does seem to me that if we're not going to amend 137.510, then we ought to strike the words or replace the defendant on probation. I think John's right.
I think that, John. Particularly when we're talking about the negative aspect, it says one that when a person is convicted and the court does not, then he can do these other things. And I think. Court does not suspend the imposition or execution of sentence, and that really says it all, doesn't it? Suspend is the key there.
See, my question was, Don, are you creating a third category? And you said apparently no. So, I'll move that, Mr. Chairman, if it'll move it along, that we lead or place it depending on.
Let me just, would it be better if you just change the word or to agent?
Mm-hmm. No, you don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. No, because.
Yeah. Well, that only applies when you put it on the board.
Okay, I agree.
You've heard the motion. Any further discussion? I think you're probably right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Carried.
Let's put what we should say.
Well, how about on the next one, okay, or probation? Do we want to leave that?
Well,
I think it's correct there. I'm a little bothered by it.
Well, do you revoke a suspended sentence? I know what the terminology is. You revoke probation, but are you really?
Well, the reason I have a question mark by that is that this purports to give power to a court after.
Yeah.
Revocation of a suspended sentence, and you speak in terms of imposing, say, a term of imprisonment. But suppose you say, I sentence you to 2 years in the Oregon State Penitentiary, and I suspend execution of sentence, and then on certain conditions, and you revoke those conditions and bring them back, at that juncture, you don't really impose a sentence. You've already imposed it. In other words, when you say, or when a suspended sentence is revoked, you don't distinguish between suspending imposition and suspending execution.
Well, Jim, shouldn't that whole clause, or when a suspended sentence or probation is revoked, because where you've suspended the sentence, you're coming under 137.510.
Well, you got to distinguish you have to distinguish between what you suspend. If you suspend execution on conditions and they're violated and you bring them back, then all you do is execute upon the sentence previously imposed.
But you don't impose the term of imprisonment.
That's right, but if
you've already imposed it.
Right, if you suspend imposition on conditions and those are revoked,
then you impose
and, well, you may or may not execute.
My movie is strike the next clause.
Well, I don't know if that would do it. Then what would we have? We've got to have something in here.
I think this is fair to say. You couldn't, if you suppose you imposed 2 years and suspended execution on conditions and then brought him back because he violated the conditions, you couldn't give him heavier than 2 years.
Yeah.
I feel reasonably sure of that. I don't think I can cite your case, but I feel reasonably sure that would be the result.
Frogley.
What?
State versus Frogley.
Well, there is a case.
Now you can say,
well, the question whether you should be able to.
Well, I don't think anybody contends that you should be able to.
No, that's why.
But, and maybe that limitation is inherent in.
And I think that's something that we should declare as a matter of policy. Or maybe poll ourselves on that, because they speak of that in this ABA book, that you shouldn't have authority to do that.
Once you...
Well, if you strike that sentence, the rest of that language out of there, it seems to me the court has got to either do A, B, C, D, or it's got to either suspend or execute.
I wonder if a lot of our trouble doesn't come by the way in which this is stated. What if we state it affirmatively, say that when a person is convicted of an offense, the court shall impose A, yeah, B, C, or D, or
yeah, I agree.
The court may suspend the imposition to do and so on, and then
Now wait a minute, you don't even really need that, do you? Actually, you just say, the court shall do A, B, C, or D, because 137.5.10 controls suspension.
Yeah, that's right.
The court shall or the court may, when a person is convicted of an offense.
Well, when a person is convicted of an offense, the court shall impose the following sentence, colon. And then use it to step A through D.
Well, let me suggest this.
You can have another E and say that he may suspend the imposition or execution of sentence.
That's about it, and let's do this. The court shall, when a person is convicted, the court shall impose the following sentence, A, B, C, or D, unless it suspends imposition or execution as provided in 137.5.10.
Well, you'll have a peculiar construction then. You'll have this, A, B, C, D, and then unless.
Now wait a minute though, hold on, Jim.
Well, I'm not finished yet. Subsection 2A or 2B would go on to describe the power of the court after revocation of probation and so on.
My only point of doing the second point I might be fine the first one now. It seems to me you don't need any reference because you're imposing a sentence under this section. And you may suspend that sentence, but then you go to 137.5.10 for that authority. So you don't need, it isn't separate from A, B, C, or D. You're still imposing a sentence. It's just a question of whether you're going to suspend it or not.
Well, no, you don't impose sentence if you suspend imposition of sentence.
Right.
You do if you suspend execution, but not imposition. There's no sentence imposed.
I agree.
Yeah.
Jim, develop this a little bit. I think that that's the way to handle it.
Well, I don't know. I'm afraid.
But this was structured the way it was under the model penal code under Michigan because it gives preference in effect. It doesn't direct the court in the first instance to send the guy to jail. In other words, that's what the reason for this kind of structure, that you're saying if you don't put him on probation or if you don't suspend sentence, then you do one of these other things. Whereas I think under your terminology, it sounds like he ought to go to jail in the first instance. In other words, you go to jail unless there's a good reason not to. Whereas the model penal code and these other codes approach is he goes on probation or suspended sentence or conditional discharge, as they call it, unless there's a good reason to send him to jail.
Don't you think you're still, I mean, that psychology, I think, it's admirable, but I think it's really, if we expect to turn the courts around in the state of Oregon by reversing the order in the statute, I think...
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I don't think it makes that much difference what order you place it in.
Can I make a suggestion? Couldn't we add, first place, as I read this 510, it's a masterpiece of poor draftsmanship anyway. Why wouldn't that be a subsection to this section anyway? You know, then you say in two, sentencing, then you say you can suspend that in subsection three.
As a policy matter, we're just beginning to see the problems that we're going to get into by trying to infuse this new model penal code, Michigan. Approach into amending part of the 137 statutes and leaving the other 137 statutes the way they are. And it seems to me that it is a little bit inconsistent with the approach that we've taken from the beginning to go chapter by chapter and comprehensively review it and repeal all the existing statutes.
I think Lee's right. I think really, when you're talking about the authorized disposition of offenders, that really you should crank 137.510 into this thing and just say, here's what you can do, and then you can list them in any order you want to. You can suspend imposition, or you can impose, or you can suspend execution. And in
cover them all,
or do a combination of them, and you can probate and so forth and so on. But really, this,
for no other reason but clarity,
this thing here, if you try to refer back and forth to it, you're going to have.
Yeah, the Senate's have done this already with respect to responsibility, because we picked up some 136 and 137 sections and completely rewrote them as part of the new responsibility procedural aspects, and we'll of course repeal those other sections now in total. So we have already dipped into 136 and 137 in a very real procedural sense.
I see the longest look in Don's face.
Well, of course, what I was trying to do is to avoid rewriting statutes that already accomplish what some of these new codes are recommending. The indeterminate sentence and this type of thing. To take all of that chapter and completely rewrite it to accomplish the improvements that we're trying to get at through our grading and classification system seems to me unnecessary.
Well, it's taken as it comes. I think we've got one suggestion here.
But that particular section, 137.010 and 137.510 really are, they're both right in this area. It seems to me we ought to pick them both up.
Why don't we do it bit by bit? I'll make a motion to that effect that it be redrafted to incorporate 137.510 into section 2 of the draft. Let's go from there. We can see where we get.
I think that's then, Don, we still may be able to retain your scheme. That's the word you're using there. We find the next section of ORS 137, which is all right, we won't have to touch it. But I agree in this one that 137.510 belongs inherently, by reason of its nature, right here. Defendant, then we'll know exactly what's going to happen to it. Might.
Say, I'm a lawyer from Bellingham, Washington. What'd you say your name was? Just happened over here, you're talking about my buddy. We're going to have to. We'll pass on your policy motion.
Well, very well then. All those in favor of the motion will say aye.
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 Don, you can't say I gave
I
you.
I don't think
a minute
appreciate
half
what you're doing here to this statute.
Aren't we doing just exactly what you said? The model penal code. They want to put the emphasis on probation first and suspension. Aren't we doing exactly what you said? The model penal code. Instead of giving a caveat here, we just bring it right up and say do this first, and then if you can't do this, then you can put it in.
But this section two that you want to now bring 137.510 into amends 137.010.
Yeah, but 137.010 is this when a fella has been convicted, Judge, this is what we want you to do. We want you to do one of the following things, and here are the range of alternatives we give you. Suspend, probate, sentence, fine, or any mixture thereof.
Well, you'll have to change section 1 so it'll provide for repealing of 137.510.
So 137.010 relates to the duty of the court to ascertain and impose punishment, and there, and you just say that the court the court has a duty in accordance with this statute to impose a sentence as follows. And then 137.510 is the power of the court. And that's what you're saying down here. The court has the power to do these various things. They kind of go together.
Unless it is exercise of power to do the 510 bit.
Well, I'm saying 510 is the power of the court. Like that. Seems to me that it fits in with the duty of the court. The only thing new then, Mr. Chairman, would be sub 3 the bottom of page 1.
Don, I think, still wants to say something. We'll move on from this. Would you, Don, go ahead?
All right, if you want to just jump 137, that's one thing. But if we're going to start just lifting one section here and moving it towards the front of the chapter, assuming that we're going to retain 137, then I think we have to stop and consider what we're going to do with the rest of the statutes that are now located or compiled adjacent to this as part of the suspended sentence and probation section of the chapter. Now, do you want to leave the rest of them the way they are, recognizing that if we don't change it, when it's compiled again, it's going to stay the same except for the sections that we remove, and that would be 137.510.
No, but Don, don't you anticipate that in the procedural revision, we're going to be making a number of changes in 137 and all the other chapters from 130 to 160 or whatever that bunch is.
Well, sure, but we won't be doing that at the time that this basic
well,
is before.
Well, what it means is that for a period of 2 years, this will be two pages up ahead.
Because all we're doing here is we're amending the 137, or sections of it.
And certainly, I think the legislative council would put in there, repealed, C-137-010.
We can instruct them to bill for them.
Yeah, because presumably, if we revise the procedure in the next 2 years, we'd be coming back with a whole new rewrite of Chapter 137 anyway. So it'd only be a 2 year period where this language of suspend imposition or execution would be a little bit out of line with where the rest of the probation sections are.
Well, a puzzle to me, Don, is you've already committed yourself by your draft, as you say in your commentary, to add new provisions relating to the various options that are available as authorized dispositions. And what I get Lee's and Jim's suggestion is, let's make that a full statement of the options available rather than having just an implicit discussion of suspension of sentence. Put it in as one of the alternatives. You've already committed yourself to listing the alternatives, and you don't clearly say why you felt that it was necessary to list them up in 010. I agree that's a good place for them. But then I'm puzzled why you're shying away from putting the full alternatives. Even if it does mean we have to go back and pluck out 510.
Well, I'm shying away from it because it was already in 137.510. Whereas sub 2 and sub 3 are new language. I mean, this is adding to the statute. And I was just trying to just restating existing law and moving it over into this section. I really don't see what good that does you. I would think we'd be better off just to have incorporate 137.510 by reference within our section 2.
Well, I don't see any harm in I agree, you're adding new language to the statute here, but it doesn't seem to me to be any harm in restructuring this chapter of ORS to that extent. It seems to me this is a logical place for it to be.
Well, how many other statutes hang on to the 510? What are we leaving back in the 500 series that relate to?
Well, the various procedural aspects of probation. You refer them to the probation officer and the conditions of probation and the procedure on revocation of probation and so on.
Of course, we have all the ones referring to imprisonment and all the ones referring to discharge and fine are back there somewhere too.
Well, yeah, they're scattered all over too.
You know, I think the route suggested is simple enough to accomplish. I mean, just amend this and maybe pick these up piecemeal. I think the preferable way to do it is, and I think it's not going to involve that much more work. It's going to do just exactly what Michigan did and have one article, disposition of offenders, next one, imprisonment, next one, probation, and set it and just follow their proposal right down the line and just eliminate chapter 137 completely. I know that gets you into more work, but
I'm not trying to avoid work.
No,
that's not the object of my comments.
Joe, I understand that.
No, but Don, if you let's assume for the moment that we weren't required to report back to the legislature until 73, which means that we'd be going all through this area along with the substantive. I'm sure you'd do a rewrite job on all of Chapter 137 and so on. And in doing that, you'd bring this part in here.
All right. John Burns, you had something to say about substitute three.
Well, I say this is,
well, what are we going to do?
Well, we've already adopted the motion, haven't we?
Well,
yeah, it's already passed that 510 be cranked into this.
Well, we go on a while and see. Maybe John's suggestion is the only way out, but why don't we go on a while?
Well, we can always rescind that action, but with reference to sub 3, I believe you had something.
Well, I just wanted to ask Dollar now. This is something new. This would be the only new concept into this proposal, right?
Well, paragraph D of subsection
yeah.
2
oh,
is
yeah. discharge.
But it's not really new. I mean, it's new. Codification of law is
yeah.
what it is. I mean, the court can do this, and this is just to clarify it. But we're not trying to limit the court.
When he does that,
in these ancillary dispositions.
When he does that, is say, I sentence you to be discharged. That means that no punishment is imposed, and there's no further liability of the defendant for that offense.
That's right. He goes.
This is to take care of the guy who's charged with a crime and is technically guilty.
And in that
crime.
Case, it also becomes a misdemeanor, doesn't it?
If the court declares it to be a misdemeanor.
Yeah. And
well, in theory, he could do that on a felony.
Well, that's what I'm
asking.
Yeah,
in theory, he could do that on a felony, although I wouldn't think you'd have judges around very long who did it.
Well, also, we had the classic.
In theory, you could do
that. Now, I set out the criteria for discharging the defendant under page 8 of authority of the court.
What
page? Page 8.
Oh, of the authority
yeah.
of the court.
Yeah.
And I've written in some limitations there.
This is your typical case where you've got a kid convicted of dry riding, he's 18, he's got no prior record, he wants to go into the service.
What it does is it legalizes the ancient tradition of continuing cases indefinitely in municipal court.
As I understand it then, section 2, sub 1, is all right. Sub 2 will be rewritten in the manner that we've stated, so the 510 will be cranked into it. Sub 3 is all right. So we're ready to go to the next.
And cranking in 510, I do think you could make it read a little clearer.
Section 3, the maximum of indeterminate sentences.
Okay, well, these are suggested maximum terms under the indeterminate sentence, which the court would fix the maximum within these prescribed limitations. These sentences follow the Michigan approach, 5 for C and 10 for a B and 20 for an A. And then again, for an unclassified felony, it's as provided in the statute defining the crime. 4 is not from Michigan, that's from Connecticut.
George, you're more than a help.
That's what I mean. Don, what do you mean here by an indeterminate sentence?
Uh-oh, I knew this was coming.
Well, that's as the language, as that is used in our existing statute.
137.120. Whenever any person is convicted of a felony, the court shall, unless it imposes, shall sentence a person to imprisonment in the penitentiary for an indeterminate period of time, but stating and fixing in the judgment of sentencing maximum penitentiary term for the crime, but shall not exceed the maximum term provided by law. Such a sentence shall be known as an indeterminate sentence. That's an indeterminate sentence.
Well, do you, as a as a person with the sentencing prerogative, feel that you should have the prerogative of, say a person who's convicted of a Class A felony, that you should be able to say, I'm going to sentence you for 10 years, rather than to an indeterminate period not to exceed the maximum, and leave the actual setting of the maximum up to the
probation
after they've completed their diagnosis. How do you feel? Now, I know certain, I discussed it with many of your colleagues, and some feel one way, some feel another way. You think you should be able to say, I'm going to give you 7 years?
Well, I have made some motions on it. Just from a purely selfish standpoint, that Lee and I were talking about this last night, purely selfish standpoint, if we went to the California system, or the Washington system, where if I said to a guy, you're going to be confined, then it's automatic, 15 years or 10 years or whatever, and the board thereafter fixes the minimum and the maximum. This would, from a purely selfish standpoint, make the job of the judge much easier. You just wouldn't have anything to say about it. You would still have the decision, which is the more crucial decision in most instances. You still have the decision, is the guy going to be confined or is he not? Because that's the, numerically, that's the decision that you have to make in well over a majority of cases. I'm not at all sure, however, that at the moment of sentencing, given the good pre-sentence information, I'm not at all sure that the board, whatever you want to call it, at that juncture, has any more knowledge of the individual than the judge does, and knowledge of what societal response should be to his conduct in terms of years. But I think you can make a whale of a good argument that if you are going to confine them, at least for any substantial period of time, maybe it makes more sense to go to the Washington system. If you confine them, then he gets the maximum. And then after the board has had a chance to look at him, they accept the minimums and the maximums, and that's what his term is governed by.
Yeah, but Jim, I don't know. I don't think I agree with you. Because every case that comes up, the factual situation is entirely different. The background of the defendant is different. And I think that the judge, he has the pre-sentence investigation report before him. And if he pre-sentencing procedures in one day, he will want to treat each one of those differently. And I think that he should. And I think simply by saying that the court in all cases, if it's a Class C, imposes 5 years and then has the parole and probation authorities make the final determination, I think that judge really, to some extent, is shirking his duty. I think his obligation is more than that.
Well, you know, I used to think that way, and then the thing that really changed my mind, and I told this story before, was when we were prosecuting this guy, Earp, for that body in the trunk murder where he killed this girl and put her in the trunk of the Mustang and she was killed and the rest of them up in Pendleton. And I went down to OCI and talked to this Dr. Scott, who was the psychologist there. And Earp had been convicted in Wasco County for AWDW and got 1 year in the correctional institution. He got down there and they found, in checking him, they found that he was psychotic. And they gave him, I guess there was an interinstitutional transfer, but they couldn't keep him at the hospital. They gave him as much counseling and psychiatric help as they had available, and he served his year flat out, the end of which they had to release him. They made a recommendation that he take outpatient treatment at the Oregon State University of Oregon Hospital. And they said they knew when he left that hospital, that unless he really availed himself of continuous program, he was going to kill somebody. Within 6 months, and he did. And they said that if we'd had him on an interim sentence where we could have kept him a little bit longer and continued to treat him, then maybe he wouldn't have done what he did. Now, that's the inverse of the other criticism, which is the disparaging sentence. Well, the disparity around the state.
You won't get perfection no matter what you do, John.
No.
That's an isolated case.
Well,
on the other hand, you impose a 5-year sentence upon someone, Class C penalty. And probation authorities aren't infallible either. They're human and they're subject to error, and they may foul up down the line, so you have error the other way.
Well, it seems to me, though, Tony, that coming back, you have, what, 94 circuit judges now, all with their own, if they have the authority within this to hold.
They've got maximums.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, all right, we say they go to a maximum. That's their own choice. If they find a Class C, and I guess I'm arguing that parole and probation ought to determine it. Because I think one of the worst things about it, and we can see it, is we judges have things, hang-ups, I guess you'd call. You get a zombie case and from Marion County, and you're going to go out for the full time. The same fact situation from maybe Klamath County. And it has nothing to do with the crime, really. And nothing to do with your rehabilitation. It seemed to me that if they both got 15 years, if that was a maximum, and then they got up there and let the parole and probation board take a look at it, who would be determining both? To me, it would be better for the correctional aspect.
Well, they have hang-ups too, and they don't have the training in the background normally that the judges do.
That's what bothers me more than anything. We're assuming parole and probation boards are capable of doing this kind of thing, and usually, I'm certainly don't want to sound critical of Oregon or anyplace else, but my experience, and maybe it isn't true generally, is that they're well-to-do citizens.
Not anymore. Not on our full-time parole board now.
That may be true, but they're still laymen. I'd rather place my hands from the standpoint of objectivity in the judge's position than I would a member of that board.
I would understand the people and the problems, and both legal and social. I would prefer a judge.
I would prefer
Jim Burns, but it's some judges in the state I would feel very concerned about.
What about the judge's peculiar qualification that goes beyond that of a parole, the fact he's heard the facts?
Well, no, because his own complete training is going to be objective. His own background, he's steeped in that.
Is that where because Jim says, and he may be right, that at the time of after the trial's over, and he's got the pre-sentence report, he's probably got as much knowledge at that point in time. But the fact is, and that doesn't answer the question, you still got 90-some judges, all with their individual personalities. Now, I can't see how you can have a corrections institution that can function. And I've got to really talk to our corrections people about this. But they've got two guys in there for the same offense with essentially the same background. One guy's in for 5 and one's in for 2. I mean, the guy that's in there for 5 is beyond rehabilitation at that point because he says, look,
Lee, you want to remember one other thing, though. There are 94 circuit judges, and it isn't going to be one judge who's imposing this sentence. It's going to be 94 of them scattered throughout the state.
Well, you know,
supposing you have a parole board that has 2 or 3 guys that have hang-ups on them. They'll get to act upon every one of these cases that are sentenced by the 94 judges. So it seems to me that it's better to err where 1 or 2 judges may give an inappropriate sentence rather than having 2 members on the parole board act upon each one of them.
Well, you know,
we're compounding the error then, it seems to me.
Well, the only thing is, though, is you are getting, I'm not talking about uniformity of sentence. I'm talking about uniformity of treatment. And I don't deny that you can have a board that's going to have hang-ups too, but at least the same hang-ups are going to apply to everybody.
An additional consideration, since I really like to widen the view some. one of the reasons we have the disparity of treatment, whether it be sentenced or any other aspects, is the tremendous range of sentences now allowed. And even under this draft as proposed, I still think it's much too great a maximum. All the studies, the ABA, the Model Penal Code, DRAS, the Model Sentencing Act, sociological, empirical studies show that these terms are much too long. They're twice as long as they should be in a normal case, putting aside the special term provision which we have back here. And this is one of the reasons it causes the non-uniformity of treatment on a large scale. You've got a maximum of 30 years for a crime, and 94 judges, you're going to have a tremendous disparity. You've got a maximum instead of only 5 years, you cut it down tremendously there.
If these were shorter, I think that I'd have less objection to imposition of the maximum each and every case.
I want to make a point, and that is, in favor of the indeterminate sentence and the parole board approach, for the verb reason, the disparity of sentence reason, and despite what I've seen as an evolution in the last 8 years in Multnomah County, now our judges are going more and more to three-judge panels in making determinations with respect to a sentence. And I think it's a fantastic thing to see three judges reading the pre-sentence report independent of each other and coming up with a conclusion which they think is in the best interest of that defendant. And when we compare that with what we had with just one judge reading a pre-sentence and then going back about 8 years where the judge was just reading the rap sheet and shooting from the hip, there's no question but that the consideration and the treatment of that defendant is just so much better today than it was 8 years ago. And I think that we have parts of the state where we don't have two or three judges in a circuit that can sit down and use the panel approach. And I think that, and we have jurisdictions where judges won't do it, like right in Multnomah County. They regard it their own prerogative. And I think because this has proved so salutary that it's evidence that the three heads is better than one, really.
Well, when we have the unified court, you have the JP, the district judge, and the circuit judge.
Can I make a point, Tony? I really do think that it seems to me that this is a major policy decision which we can't make here.
That's right.
It's got to be made by the full commission. And obviously, we're pretty evenly divided right here. I think we ought to at least prepare an alternative draft.
Well, let's talk about the number of years here. That's going to make some difference.
But Tony, you have to bear in mind that this scheme, the Model Penal Code and the ABA and the Minor Sentencing Act and this and all of these schemes of limited classification with somewhat less maximums in each assumes that you continue to repose the power in the trial judge.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're going to go to a
Washington or California type situation, then I'm not so sure you want this kind of a scheme at all, because the very basis for development of this scheme is they assume that we're going to leave it in the hands of the sentencing judge at the outset.
That's right.
So, and just have a legislative maximum beyond which you can't go.
But if we adopt the Washington, California system, what need is there for pre-sentence investigations and reports for that judge?
Well, because
we just
want to
get rid of them?
No.
Why?
Because, look,
probation or suspension.
And the current figures show approximately 60%. These are hard figures to come by because of the felony misdemeanor option bit, but of what are true felony cases presently, about 60% are placed on probation. So, you know, well over the majority of the cases, the judge still needs that to determine whether he's going to probate. And I have heard very little advocacy for taking even that decision out of the judge's hands, which I think would be an even more a radical step, if you will, or even more of a change. So you still need the pre-sentence investigation.
Wouldn't your conscience bother you a little bit if here's a 21-year-old kid, first offense, and he committed a Class B felony, and he came up to be sentenced on the same day that someone else, who as far as the record is concerned, it's his second offense. The circumstances under which it occurred showed a great deal more force, vindictiveness towards society. He's a hardened criminal, you know it, and you have to impose the same sentence on those two.
Well, of course, the upshot of that would be that in the average situation that you described, you'd probate the one and sentence the other.
But nevertheless, you mentioned a while ago that now you're talking about the average case. While ago you say that even if there's one or two where this occurs at the probation level, that it's bad.
Does anybody know, I haven't had occasion to research, does anybody know whether the California system works any better than any place else?
Well, of course, this gets back to the fact that what is failing to work is not how many years we give them, but the very fact that we give them long terms in absolutely miserable institutions. And the correctional system itself is failing, and it's failing in California, and they spend more money than any place else, and they got more alternatives and so on, but the fact of business is that even their system has generally about as high a rate of recidivism as the systems in Oregon and other states.
Jim, can you point out one state to me which has either one system or the other where you can say, oh, look at there, look what a good job they're doing. There's very little, if any, recidivism, and it works. You can't do it, can you?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a completely subjective thing that we're discussing, actually, and
well,
it's speculation.
It does go to some aspect, I think, of a kind of a due process argument that you can answer it. Really becomes a matter of opinion, I suppose, but it does seem to me, in my view, that I was citing the case of Don recently that Brad Charlie was telling me about in my office. He was defending a guy on a manslaughter case, and he recommended the guy plead guilty, and he had made a careful study of the over a year's period in Multnomah County on manslaughter sentences, and he fully expected the guy would get no more than a year. The guy got he got 10 years. And taking this guy's back, he went back and checked the background against the sentence and the charge. That's a pretty rough deal.
Senator, I think one of the reasons why we can't look at a state and say there's a system that works is because we don't, in this country, we have the tradition of extreme repressive attitudes about treatment of offenders. And nobody in this country has anywhere approached some of the European systems where a term of a year or two in prison is unusually long. Okay? The point is that we do have facts, indirectly, which show probation is the most successful as far as recidivism rates go. Those who have been in prison before and are second offenders and who get probation or go to prison and released on parole are a great higher rate of recidivism involved because of the hardening effects of the prison system, which Jim has said, it just isn't working anywhere for all kinds of reasons. It isn't working.
That's true, but not because of the difference in this.
No, not because of the basic systems, but I do suggest that we might think that it is for some reasons that we can correct, but only for purposes of Oregon being able to say in 10 years this was the right way to do it, and that is to de-emphasize the tremendously long terms that are traditional and to emphasize the immediate return to society of these people on probation. But this still, I still feel the way that I summed up, feel that this ought to be a judicial judgment rather than
there's,
a parole board.
George, there's one other thing to be considered. It may be a factor, I don't know. And that is this, the deterrent factor that's involved here. If society, the public as a whole, realizes if you commit this offense, your penalty is going to be 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years. Now, normally we say that's why we got rid of capital punishment. One of the reasons, at least, was that it was not a deterrent. Now, what effect is that factor going to have upon the incidences of crime?
I don't think it'll have any.
You don't think it'll have any?
Relationship between the length of
length of sentence and deterrence.
The general theory is that the certainty is much more important than the degree.
I think you could document, now, I'm not in favor of capital punishment, but I think you can document the incidence of armed robberies, the increase in the incidence of armed robberies, and the appeal of the death penalty, simply because now guys are using loaded guns, hardcore criminals are using loaded guns in armed robberies, and will take the chance that they might have to kill somebody. Because they know that even if they're convicted of murder, they're not going to get any more than they would for armed robbery with a loaded gun. Whereas before the death penalty was repealed, you had these hardcore guys would pull armed robbery and the gun would always be unloaded.
Let me ask the Burns boys a question.
we're running our gas station down here.
If we do go to the true indeterminate sentence, which I think is what this sometimes called, what is your feeling with respect to the penalties that appear here, 20, 10, and 5 years?
Well, I think you have a very practical...
Burns?
Want.
No, go ahead.
No.
Go ahead, Lee.
Well, one thing is we've got we do have to face up to those maximums. I would tend to probably agree that maybe they are too harsh, but I think we have a very practical political problem. The fact is how much will society...
emphasize the length of terms, you would want to emphasize the special term provision that would go hand in hand with them. It's in section whatever it is of the next article.
Yeah.
Well, Tony,
it would be a purpose of it.
Tony, one thing that you have to bear in mind.
That
our society isn't aware of how our system is actually working now. You see, the parole board here in Oregon, in fact, exercises a tremendous amount of control, and the control is the greatest on these ones involving heavier sentences. So, for example, your average life sentence in Oregon, the guy will serve about 11 years on average. Now, that's including both murder life and non-murder life. That's what he serves, actually. So that the parole board, and similarly, I can go down the list, although I don't remember all the figures right now, but when you say life, it means 11 years, basically. It doesn't mean for everybody, but that's on the average what's going to happen. And you can't just look at the system. As far as an effective system, you can't just look at the one end, the input end. You got to look at the output end, too, as to what these sentences actually mean.
Is your answer then that probably these are all right?
Well, my own feeling is I wouldn't go any higher.
Would you go any lower? You know, you talk about these averages. There were two duck hunters were out hunting one day, and a duck flew by, and they both shot. One of them shot about 10 feet in front of it, and the other 10 feet behind it. One of them said, "Get on the average, we sure kill that SOB, didn't we?"
Well, I think they're all right for this reason. You say, should we make them lower? Should we make a Class C felony 2 years or 1 year? The correctional people tell you that if you're going to send me a kid to OCI that to get into a vocational program down there, give me enough time to really rehabilitate the kid. Because if you send him down, if you send him down for a year or for 2 years, they don't even get in the program.
And what's the average time that they serve?
I don't know what the average is.
It has been one-third. Now, you have to remember, however, in this discussion,
it has been one-third traditionally for a long time. That's why typically we send, I don't send anybody to LCI until very recently, less than 3 years. But the fact of business is the new parole board is getting away from that automatic one-third. This will take some time. But you see,
one-third, I'm sorry, Judge. Serve one-third.
Yeah, approximately before you're likely to be paroled. So that traditionally,
rule of thumb, I take it.
Yeah. Traditionally, you say, now here's a kid, he's a typical 21-year-old sociopath and a deprived background, and he needs to get his high school degree, and he needs to get vocational training. 3 years in OCI, because you know that he can't do both of those in less than 1 year. If you send him down there with 2 years, he's got that one-third mentality cranked into him, so he immediately starts thinking, in 8 months, if I behave myself, I'll be out, which in itself retards his desire to undertake the rehabilitation that he can get there. Well, the new parole board, this is mainly because of Jack Wiseman's bringing to bear his views on it, the new parole board is trying to get away from that and trying to individualize, which I think is all to the good. And so that when they get their program thoroughly underway, I can say to them, 2 years in OCI, but I want that guy to get at least 1 year there so that he can get these things.
Why should you have anything to say about it when you've just relinquished your jurisdiction completely by imposing the maximum and letting the parole and probation authorities take care of it?
Well, that's why I say that 5-year maximum is necessary for the Class C, and why I think that the classification here is pretty good, the way you've got it set up, except for murder. And possibly with the exception, we'll talk a little bit later about armed robbery and maybe first-degree kidnapping.
Can I make a point or two, if I may? I think that there's a tendency, and I think most of the states do the same thing. You have a tendency to tar yourself with the same brush that you indict the penal systems throughout the United States. The fact of the matter is, Oregon, in comparison to the other states in the Union, looks extremely good. Saul Rubin himself has said this in a reprint of a Columbia Law Review article by Saul Rubin on penal reform of the Model Sentencing Act in 1965. It shows that there were only, these are statistics released in 1960 and 63.